Welcome to False Bottom Girls, a podcast about the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer and brewing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hudson, owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced Cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, sensory expert, homebrewer, and advanced Cicerone. I love when it says recording in progress and it gives me the option to leave meeting. Like, what if I was just like...
You're like, not okay. Today!
Yeah. Like recording, yeah. Like, oh no, this is all off the record.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to the very on-the-record False Bottom Girls. I'm Jen. That's Rachel. She's drinking water. You know, something I've started doing recently, which I'm pretty sure that you do all the time, but like the past few weekends, like, I don't know, 4:35 on Friday, I just put my phone on Do Not Disturb, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like...
I don't even know. I think Jeff set that up for me and didn't even, like, tell me. Or yeah. Maybe he did, and then I was not listening, which is probably more likely. But, yeah, it's great. And I'm like, oh, I don't even notice the text until I look back and I see it on the thing. I'm like, oh, this person knows me. But then sometimes I'm like, find myself, because I'm a business owner, you won't have this problem. But I'm, like, checking back because I don't want to make sure that employees aren't texting me with a problem.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and that's why, like, during the week, I have Do Not Disturb, like, every night that turns on. But during the week, during the work day, usually don't, because, yeah, then I forget and I'll be like, oh, I haven't checked Slack because it's not dinging at me or my phone's not lighting up, so I'm not looking at it. Here we are back again. It was probably a completely seamless transition for everyone listening. And you all know, if you've been listening for a while, you know it takes a few minutes for us to get our shit together.
Yeah.
Even when we've been on this Zoom call for 30 minutes.
Don't
already.
Tell them that. Throw us under the bus. Telling them our secret. We were talking about other things. We have a lot of things to catch up on.
Right. That is true. But today, we're continuing our conversation about what is, for this podcast, the most neglected ingredient. I do not feel bad for hops. They are not oppressed. They're fucking fine. But
for some reason, in the 3.5 years we've been doing this, 4.5? How long?
No, it's like 5 years in August.
Okay. So the
1 year for every ingredient except
we've
hops.
Been doing this. We've hardly, our first episode about hops was like our last episode or the one before that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Recently. Yeah. So we're going to continue on. And yeah, my bad. But yeah, I don't feel bad.
Right.
Maybe for our listeners who are like, why do they hate hops? We just talk about hops. Y'all, if there's something you want to talk about, tell us.
That's
give
true.
Give us some recommendations, because, you know, we've been talking about a lot, and apparently there's a lot more we could talk about. Sometimes you get, topic block, like writer's block.
Yeah. Topic no, block. That's very valid.
Yeah. So help us out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could have
stop
fixed
being
this.
So fucking lazy.
Like, this could have been fixed a long time ago.
This is on you.
People are like turning it off the podcast.
Yeah,
now.
They're like, you know what? I really don't need this abuse from a podcast I listen to.
They're not wrong. Yes. I had this idea for like kind of exploring hops through the world of just different beer styles and like the hops themselves, because there's so many hops out there, right? There's so many different growing regions. How do you know which hops should be a part of which beer style? How do you know what's okay to substitute and what's okay to use, and like what do all these descriptions mean and these numbers mean and all that jazz? So we kind of, in like thinking about how to talk about all this and making like some notes, kind of determined to start out with like different growing regions and talk about the hops grown there and what styles of beer you find them in.
Yeah, and I think that's really good, because like you said, I lost my fidget toy.
You should keep that in the episode.
Well, I did. So I recently got this fidget toy. It's this like a silent one. And it's really helpful for me, but I got it because usually when I'm on calls like this, well, one, I pick my nail polish off, or I like all of my headphones and stuff I have wrapped up with rubber bands. So I don't just have cords everywhere. So I sit there and play with the rubber bands. But one of my biggest fears is getting hit in the eyes with either a rubber band or like a cork from a bottle. So I freak myself out when I'm playing with the rubber band, but also since I play with them so much, they break all the time.
Yeah.
Which is not good when one of your biggest fears is having a rubber band break into your eyeball. So I just got this little silent.
I'm going to send you some safety glasses.
So I have some safety glasses.
There you go.
You got me from Pilot.
There you go. Use them while you're on your calls. And then you can, then you can play with your rubber bands. Worry free. And then when you're on your call, maybe somebody will just get the fun show. Rubber band. Flipping it to your eye.
And I can be like, see?
Like everyone's gonna be like, maybe I should start wearing safety glasses also. Right. Very dangerous.
But anyway.
Anyways, yes, now that we have our fidget toy back.
Right. I think that it's like we've talked about, you know, particularly for the two of us, like studying for master and stuff, you're just getting more and more granular and like deeper and deeper into the subject matter. And so like we forget, for as much as we joke that there are four main ingredients in beer, that like we haven't talked about hops at all. But, you know, recently I did a 100% beer 101 presentation for a manufacturing company that one of my friends works at. And, you know, I brought in like samples of malt and hop pellets, and there were probably 40 people there. And so many of them came in and, you know, we're handing them like, okay, here's your samples and stuff. And they're just like, what is this stuff?
Yeah.
What are these? And like, they are people who, you know, are like, oh, beer is fun. I want to learn more about beer. So there is an interest there. But then, you know, like they were just completely like mystified by what these little cups were that we were handing them. And it was a good reminder to me that like, oh yeah, like most of the time, most of the people I'm around on a daily basis are beer people who, you know, who know that there's four main ingredients and they know what hot pellets look like and whatever. And it's easy to forget that that is not common knowledge. And even like things like these growing regions and, you know, why different hops go into different styles. I remember being a home brewer and kind of learning that stuff, which, you
know, because there's like, how do you learn it almost?
Right. Exactly.
It's not that much information.
Right. And I think one of the overarching things, particularly with like with this and when we've talked about different yeast strains and like different malt, is you can use whatever ingredients you want in a beer. So, you know, you can use, I don't know, all German hops in your American IPA and you can still call it an American IPA. Is it an American IPA? I don't know. But is it not? I don't know. You know, so like it's all very squishy. So, you know, you do what you like. And I remember having other like homebrewers, I think, and it's really common when you first start out and it is like a kid in a candy store because there's so many different options. And like you said, like it is overwhelming and it's hard to know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like other homebrewers being like, oh, I'm making an IPA with the Y yeast Weizen yeast. And it's like, well, then you're not making an IPA. Like by definition, you're making a Weizen beer because you're using Weizen yeast. But then it's like, well, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
If you're making something that you like to drink, like then who cares? And you know, like
but
maybe
if you do
that
care,
will be a really, really good flavor profile. Yeah.
And, it could be.
It could be. I doubt it, but it could be. I just don't think a Weizen yeast would go well with a hop
neither.
Profile of an American IPA. But maybe
of an American IPA, exactly. Like we have seen the hopped up style, like the wheat beer style, like the Schneider Hopfen Weiss, like a hoppy wheat beer. We've seen that, but that's not gonna be your American type hops. You know, that's gonna be more of your like Tetnator type hop, your German hop.
Right. And that's
different.
Also, you know, like learning how to build recipes. And I remember, you know, like my husband saying, oh, you should use like a little bit of like caramel malt in this style. And I was like, why? And he's like, I don't know, that's just in every recipe that I read. So then like as and we've talked about that on here, like you kind of have to reverse engineer, okay, well, why would you have this? What does this do? And just better understanding your ingredients. So something like, what kind of hops go in what styles? Like when you first suggested it, I was like, well, I don't know how interesting that's going to be because it's pretty obvious. But then I was like, well, it's not obvious though,
No,
because
definitely
it
not.
wasn't obvious to me
It
when I
takes time.
started. And yeah, and like now it definitely is one of those things. It's just like secondhand, like, oh yeah, I'm going to make an IPA and I know that I like Cascade and Simcoe and Citra, and that's what's going in my IPA, not, saws and like fuggles.
One of the things that was super hard for me when I first started, and I love taking Cicerone as an example when talking about things because it is very part of my life. But when I started out for like learning about the second level test, started studying, you on the syllabus, there's a lot of hop regions and you start to Google that, right? Like hops in Germany, and there are so many hops in Europe or Britain, so many in the US, like there's so many different types. You're almost like, where do I start with learning this? How do I take it in? And if you don't know, like if you're not brewing, you probably don't know that a lot of American IPAs are using these three big hops. You probably don't know that German beers are using these like four noble hops. So like you don't know that until you learn it. And that can be very hard to put all that together because then you're like, okay, well, what I have German hops, but then I have noble hops, which are German hops, but not all beer hops are noble hops, even though they're German hops. It's like,
Right, exactly.
what?
Well, and I think of too, like every few years I'm like, maybe I'll get into wine the same way I'm into beer. I'm not. I can't make myself get excited about other like I'm not looking to be a well-rounded like beverage professional, but it's the same thing as like you're reading about like, oh, okay, well, this type of grape grows well in this region, and like having that like, oh, okay, now I get it, and
Takes a
remembering that
long time.
I was like that with beer too, where it's like, oh, did you know that like you can like New York State used to be the biggest hop grower in the United States, and now it's the Western United States, and you could grow hops here, but they're not good. Like I remember being that like at that level of being really excited about that information now that to me is like, well, yeah, yeah, that's just something that I know now, but I didn't always
I was
just
born
know
knowing that.
it.
Just
Yeah,
kidding.
exactly. Yes, it is not inherent. I
No,
was
it's
not
not.
just born knowing that. But yeah, I learned it at a certain point, and I know that with the two of us, again, for the past few years, this has like largely been a vehicle for us in terms of studying for Master Cicerone and forgetting that, not everyone is on that path, and not everyone, wants to go down that path. And there are people who are like, well, I don't need something so technical. Tell me about the hop growing regions.
So let's do it.
All right, tell me about the hop growing regions.
I'll start out. So continental Europe is kind of all in big one big jump, what jump? That's not the right word. One big area over there. But
It
let's
is a
start out.
continent, yes.
It is a continent, continental Europe. It's all together. When I say that, we have a lot of hop growing regions like Germany, Czech Republic, Britain, Poland, Belgium, France, Slovenia. That's what I mean. Anyways, so we'll start with Germany and also kind of the Czech Republic, because remember, this is all like one big Bavaria area at the time where a lot of these,
Bavaria.
Bavaria area. It was all one big Bavaria. Yeah, I like that. It's like you're mixing the words without even knowing that you're doing
Yeah, it's a
it.
portmanteau.
So we have the four main growing regions in Germany. First one is Hallertau, and that's going to be the north of Munich. They are super big for growing their, spoiler alert, Hallertau hops. We also have Elbe-Saale. That is the southern part of, former east side of Germany. That's going to produce about 10% of the Hallertau volume. Hops and maybe some other small amount of hops, like some pearl hops is one I found, but a lot of Halteyer hops. Tettnang is near the Swiss border. That's going to produce about 5% of all German hops. This is mainly Tettnanger hops that come out of that area. Also some Halteyer Mittelfrüh, some pearl are also grown. And that area seems kind of relatively more newer of a hop growing region. And I say like that meaning the 1800s, but versus the other areas, thought was a little interesting. And then we have the
Yeah.
Spalt area, and that's near like and Franconia, kind of near the city of Bamberg. And that area started growing hops in 1341. And that produces the Spaltler hop, Spaltler Select, some more Halteyler. And that's about less than 2% of all German hops. And there's also some small growing other areas like near the Rhine River. They're going to have very small production, not anything that's probably going to be exported out of that city.
One thing that, as you're talking about this, I remember I was doing when I was studying for, I think when I f maybe first started studying for advanced, that I found to be really helpful that I learned from like watching like Somme and, you know, looking at like the way that wine people were studying. This isn't as important in beer as, or the emphasis isn't really as there on beer as it is for wine. But I actually printed out like a blank map of Germany and, or, you know, one with like the
Oh
cities
yeah,
and like
I'm
the provinces or whatever outlined on it with those borders, and went in and like, okay, here's, you know, here's Hallertau, here's, you know, relative to Munich, here's Spalt, and like highlighting those, and then also like, okay, here's the Rhine Valley, you know, here's Köln and all of that. And that really helped me, like, okay, now I'm looking at a map so I can better visualize when I'm reading about like Dusseldorf or, you know, or Bamberg. Now I can see where that is. And then also, like, where is the malt grown or where is the barley grown? You know, where are the hops grown? And that was just super, super helpful
it is. You're
for
not
me.
wrong. Even when I was making this outline, I picked up on that fact for myself because I have traveled a lot over there and I have been to a lot of these areas, not all of them, but I can definitely map it out in my mind a lot easier. And I was like, this is easy for me to understand, but I could definitely see where doing that, because I've done that too. Like the
Yeah.
study first. Like I was like, I need to figure this out. Especially
Right.
with like Germany and all the styles. Like I was basically like, this is Schwarzbier area. This
Yes.
is Kölsch area.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and it really does, because it's
It's
taking
helpful.
that theoretical information and, well, it's, I mean, it's not just theoretical, it is factual, but, you know, reshuffling that information in a visual way is like, oh, okay, now I understand. And now when I look at Germany, you know, I can think about that. Or as we're talking through all of these hop regions today, you know, keeping in mind where hops grow best between the 35th and 55th parallels in the northern and southern hemisphere. So as, you know, as Rachel's talking about all these areas, if you look at them on a map and you kind of highlight those parallels where hops grow the best, it's also like, oh, okay, this makes sense. It's also kind of weird to think that like Germany is pretty like directly, well, I shouldn't say west, but you know, like it's pretty lined up with like Yakima Valley. And you wouldn't, I don't know, like I just don't think about the
You don't think
world
about
that way.
it. Yeah, you're like, I know it's over there, but yeah, it's pretty high up.
Yeah, it's like I picture it. Yeah, I picture it on the, you know, the Mercator map or whatever, where it's, yeah, it's like, no, that's like over, way over there. That's not directly in line with anything I know. But
Exactly.
yeah, so going through this, I think that is something that if, particularly if you're studying for Cicerone or if you're just interested, you know, in learning more about that, taking the time to like map out that geography is super, super helpful.
And then, so with those regions, those growing regions, we have what's called the four German noble hops, which also, I should just say four noble hops, not necessarily just Germany, but We bring this up because you probably hear this thrown around a lot, especially if you're studying, like know about what the Four Noble Hops are. It's
Right, like I
something that
think,
you're supposed to memorize, you know?
yeah, and like Sam Adams, I think on maybe on their packaging, like says something about like this is brewed with the finest noble hops.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about noble hops, it's also important to keep in mind that that is like the term noble is a marketing that was made up in the 80s. Like it's not, I remember when I was learning about it, and I think probably you too, and most people, like you hear noble and it's like, okay, this is European and it's noble, you're thinking, you know,
You're thinking like it's a hop, like this is like a,
kingdoms, yeah,
yeah.
and everything. And
It's a good
like,
point.
yeah, and it's just, it's not that. It's not this old ancient term. And it seems like from some of what I read, because it's really hard to figure out like, okay, when exactly did we start saying noble? That it seems like it's kind of similar to the tongue map in that it was just kind of a mistranslation
Yeah.
of like some kind of German text, you
Yeah.
know, like it's some guy's research PhD thesis from the 70s in old German texts,
Yep.
like the Escarpment Labs guys say. And so the term noble hops is not, it's not actually conveying
Yeah.
what it seems like it conveys. It's like this is just a group of like four hops
Yeah.
that were used a lot in German and Czech brewing. And like you said, at the time it wasn't German and Czech brewing, it was like Bavaria and Bohemia. And
Exactly.
they're all very like culturally very similar.
Yes. So, and a lot of these hops are named after the area that they're cultivated in. So, when we talk about the four noble hops, we are talking about like this is like if you're going to be taking a test and someone says, "What are the four noble hops?" You say,
Hey, Muppets say silly things. That's what you say, because that's how I remembered. That was my mnemonic for noble hops.
Muppets.
Yeah. Hollertown, Middlefra,
Okay.
Spalt, Saws, Tetany.
Those are the four noble
Hey,
hops.
Muppets say silly things.
That's right. And these are going to be like a whole tire. We're talking about like aromatics of earth, spice, maybe like a little citrusy. We're talking, it's like a earthy type hop.
When we started recording this, I was like, Rachel, I didn't prepare anything. And now I continue to interrupt you
No,
with
don't fix it.
things. But from, so as we know, I'm big into descriptive language and into sensory, and I'm curious to hear what the descriptor earthy means to you, Rachel, specifically.
I think it means kind of like, I don't want to say the word dirt because I don't mean that in the sense of like Jossman or something, but I mean in the sense of like woodsy.
What does woodsy
Floral.
mean?
Woodsy. Like,
What flowers?
I can't do this right
Okay.
now.
No, but I
You
agree
can
with
do it though.
you. Yeah, no, I think I agree with you in terms of earthy. I don't mean jasmine, but I do
Yeah.
mean dirt. And for me, I think like
But I don't want to like, I don't really mean
mushrooms
dirt.
are
Yeah.
earthy, or like I think of like, I don't know, like rotting log. But
Yeah.
like not in a bad
Although that's like
way.
a, yeah, exactly. Not in.
But then it's also maybe that's just woodsy, but it's like decay. I just need to be better at like my decay descriptors.
I think there's, when it comes to European hop, there can be definitely be a difference between the more kind of floral honey side of ones versus that woodsy, decaying,
Yeah, or like a
earthy, spicy.
nutmeg. Yeah, like or like truffle, I don't know. It's like mushroom, but then I think, well, mushroom makes me think of umami. And when I'm saying
Yeah.
earthy, I'm not really saying mushroom, because if it were mushroomy, I would just say it's a mushroom. So I don't know. That's a thought experiment for everyone listening.
Yeah, I mean, so
How do
these,
you describe earthy?
yeah, I mean, it is a good thought experience because you do see this word thrown around a lot when you're Googling about these hops and, you know, trying to learn about them. But, and you're not wrong. If you're going to go past second level Cicerone, you must be able to describe earthy.
Right. I'm also trying to do the same with minerally, because in Ariel
Yeah.
Johnson's book, Flavorama, that was one of the first things she talks about is like minerality isn't that good of a descriptor, because what do you mean by that? Because like
Yeah.
salt's a mineral, so is it salty? It's like, no, it's not salty. Which is also just, I
Yeah.
can let everybody know this is going to translate into me licking rocks. So just
I can taste.
the look on Rachel's
Yeah.
face just now,
I
the
mean,
way, like
I believe you.
the slowness with which she closed her eyes and opened them again, and me saying I'm gonna start licking rocks. It's like, yeah,
I had
that
a moment. I was like,
tracks.
that's, yeah, exactly. I was like, tracks. Exactly. No, I can taste. I get the descriptor is awful, but I can taste it. And when I taste it, I know it, because I hate that water profile. And I noticed it hardcore when I was in Dusseldorf, not necessarily in the beer, but in the water. I was like, this water is awful. I hate this water. It is minerally, it is your, I have no idea how to describe
But
it.
I do think that like noticing minerality is a, particularly because it can be hard for us to come up with descriptors for water or how water affects the beer, and minerality is going to be from the water. So I do think the minerality, being able to pick that out, is a, has shown that you are improving, you know, your ability to pick out each one of the four individual ingredients, because we don't normally, you know, when you're writing a description for like master or something, unless there is a minerality to the water profile, you're probably not writing descriptors of the water.
No, you're not, but you can, if you need to learn what mineral, I mean, you, I feel like you could taste it. There's definitely some type bottles of water out there that I don't like, and I really don't know
Yeah,
what they are.
Evian
I
is
feel
like
like,
very high
yeah,
minerality.
yes, I don't like that. I don't like that.
Yeah.
But going back real quick so we can
Yes.
knock out
I
these
was like, I
styles.
have a hard stop at 1:15, and then
Yeah.
I just proceed to continue to interrupt you to badger you about descriptors.
No, it's very gin-like. It's fine. But it's not bad. It is a good point, something to be thought about. And that's going to happen with everything, all your descriptors.
Right. Herbal.
Yeah.
What does herbal mean? Is that bay leaf? Is it
That's a little easier to not nail down.
tarragon? Yeah, that's true.
Things that you try on a regular basis are easy. Now, if you're going around licking rocks
Right. This is like
or
how I develop pica.
logs, you might develop a better vocabulary for earthy. So
That's
please.
true.
Please do us all a favor, Jen, and do the work, do the dirty
I
work.
will,
Someone has to.
yeah. I'll do the earthy work for us.
She just made this face. That was inappropriate. We're never going to get through this episode. All right. So,
I'll be quiet.
all right. We're going to wrap up the noble hop part, but all that to say is these are the hops of European lagers, Bavarian style ales, Weissbiers, you know, Saaz specifically in the Czech style. Pilsners. Saaz is grown in the city of Zlatok, the one that's not named for its city, but it is very traditional. It is the hop of the region. I think if the only reason a Czech brewer has anything other than Saaz hop is probably because it couldn't get the Saaz hops they needed. But I'm just kidding, I'm sure.
I think low key Saaz is probably one of my favorite
I love
hops.
Saaz.
Like it's not a sexy hop, but you have like a well-made Czech lager like we have, and like mwah, Saaz hops. And I also really like going to hop yards where they have like the Saaz yard and saying Saaz yard.
If you can ever are fortunate enough to go over there and see some hop yards, or you could see them in the United States too, but like they are beautiful. Beautiful. All right, but moving north, just up into the area of Britain. We have done an episode before on the Fuggle and the Golding Hop. Highly re recommend listening to that episode. These are very traditional English grown hops, but they are also really responsible for a lot of hops that came out of American cultivation. You know, different strands of them being brought over here, being bred. You know, Cascade, I believe, is a granddaughter, great granddaughter, something like that, of Fuggle. And that is one of our American hops, which we'll talk about in a second. But this is going to be good for your British ales, stouts, bitters, even like Belgian style ales, saisons, different American ales, even. You can, you know, amber ales, brown ales, very versatile type of hop. I am like specifically talking about Fuggle and Goldie when I refer to that. There's a lot of different types of English hops, but yeah, I think those are the top two when you're going to like talk about if I want to make an ESB, these are going to be very easy to find at your homebrew store. You can rely on them to do well with any English style if you don't want to go down the rabbit hole, if you just need a couple options. I
Right.
think those are some good catch-alls.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that British hops are probably the best kind of catch-all out of
Yeah.
all like all of the other hop growing regions. Like British hops, you're solid.
Yeah, and like I said, you can this, I obviously we just said that, but like it's they're so universal. You're going to find these hops like crossing paths a lot in different styles, and that's okay. That's normal. They're all coming from each other anyways.
Right.
And then we have the United States, which is the second largest producer of hops in the world, Germany being first. When classic American hops, we talk about like West Coast style hops. You might hear the term the sea hops thrown around. And these are going to be specifically Cascade, Columbus, and Centennial. And this is like a classic American IPA, American Pale, think Sierra Nevada, grapefruit aromas, flavors, definitely like more on the citrus character side versus like tropical. This is like very citrusy, grapefruit, lemon, lime, zest kind of aromas and flavors you'll be getting out of them. Cascade is kind of like a lot of people like to call it the American Fuggle. This was actually developed by the USDA at Oregon State University and released in 1972. So it's a big deal hop. It was like one that was around for a long time because there weren't like a ton of hop options in 1972. So for brewers during that day to be able to start using this as this like citrusy American Fuggle was a big deal. And it's probably
Right.
why I don't remember when Sierra Nevada opened, but I almost wonder if like breweries like that are the reason why so much Cascade are being made because they're like older breweries, you know?
Right. So Cascade is one of those stories, kind of like Citra, where when Cascade was first developed, there was not a market for it. And people were like, no, you know, because they're still wanting like noble hops, which again, if you think about like mid-70s, there aren't microbreweries, right? It's all macro and they have very specific needs. And then in the mid-70s, there was, I forget which hop it was, but it had a terrible crop year. And Coors ended up deciding to use Cascade and as an alternative.
That's
And
right.
that Coors deciding to do that. You know, the researcher who made Cascade like held on to Cascade because he was like, I think there's something special about this. The market doesn't want it right now. And then Coors decided that they would start using Cascade, which is what made Cascade like take off and make it more available for like Sierra Nevada to use Cascade
Makes sense.
when they opened. And then like Coors eventually switched, you know, to a different, like, you know, all of the big macro people have like their own proprietary
Yeah.
ingredients. So Coors eventually switched away from it, but then, you know, Coors saying like, okay, yes, we will use Cascade as an alternative to, I want to say probably Saaz since it's still got that citrus flavor to it. But, you know, then that's why Cascade got adopted by craft brewers in the US is because it was a hop that was then available to them. But yeah,
Yeah,
like Ca
makes
Cascade
sense.
almost didn't exist and neither did Citra.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been awful. Just kidding. Citra is the name of my dog because of the hop.
Yep.
It's my butterfly effect.
I am glad that you threw in the thing about the sea hops because I remember like sea hops or like CTZ, those were things that I would hear like people just toss out, you know, when you're like first starting out and it's like, what? Oh, and you know, it's one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, totally sea hops. Yeah. And it's like, what does that
Yeah.
mean?
Then the next one, Centennial, being sometimes it's called Super Cascade. We're talking about like a lower higher alpha acid for Centennial, maybe 8 to 11% versus like a 4 to 6% for Cascade. So obviously, as a brewer or a big batch brewer even, that's like less hops you can use with higher alpha acids. So that's always great. Also probably more expensive, so but to Bell's Two Hearted, it's 100% hopped with Centennial, so that can be a great beer. I also just love that beer because it's so consistent. Like,
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like pack, like in the package, you know, it's especially you see on draft, you're gonna get some good bills too, hard it.
Yeah.
So seek that out. And then Columbus, and you said it a few minutes ago, that also known as CTZ, which stands for Columbus, Tomahawk, and Zeus. And basically that just comes to like down to some different copyright issues. That two companies were basically trying to put out the same hop with different names at the same time, and this is what they agreed to. So there's all pretty nearly indistinguishable. We get a little bit of that spicy, for lack of a better word, earthy, pungent, but with some citrus overtones coming out. So I like to think this is like a higher alpha acid, like Saz hop, super high in alpha acids, 14 to 16. I use this hop a lot for bittering, for stouts, and for lagers. And I even have a West Coast IPA right now that's 100% Columbus hop. So it's a very
I've got a
versatile
can
hop.
of that in my
Ah,
refrigerator.
nice.
I
It's
have one can
delicious.
left. It is delicious.
It's very good. It's everything you need for a West Coast IPA. It's Columbus. But it's great. Like, I also use it in my milk stout as bittering hop. I use it in different lagers as bittering hop. You know, essentially bittering hop in theory is supposed to be good for your just your bitterings and not impart any flavor and aroma anyways, right? So I could use it everything if I wanted to, in theory. But moving on, I think there's a again, there's a lot of different American hops. And we just don't have time to talk about them all. But well, I just really want to touch base on the th big three or the C hops because, you know, one plus one equals two. And we do a bad job of going over that sometimes. So I want to make sure we're touching on the basics. And then that brings us to kind of our newer Australian, I say newer, they are a little bit new in the terms of the world of hops, but hops from Australia and New Zealand, things like Galaxy, Citra, these super big hops with pango. That would be papaya and mango.
Bingo.
Mango flavors and aromas, passion fruit, guava, candy-like kind of characters. So this is very different than our big citrus focus, right?
I will say,
And
sorry, you did
yeah.
say Citra was
Did
an
I?
Australian hop, and yeah.
Citra's not an Australian hop. I didn't mean that. I
I know
just meant,
you didn't. I want it I,
but
for our
thank you for fixing
listeners.
me.
Yes.
Thank you for fixing me. So I kind of like the little history of quick tidbit about Australian hops. Like, I think for a long time they had a big hop that they used prior to ringworm that was fine, but not like no, and
No,
the,
it's
no.
Pride of Ringwood.
What'd I say? I wrote ringworm and my ringwood. And I'm like, which is fine.
It took me a second. I was like, wait a second.
Well, like what I meant by which is fine, like the consensus of this hop was like, this is an okay hop. It gets the job done, but it doesn't, it's not like exciting. And then,
Yeah, and it also has a very distinct, like, iron kind of blood-like character to it. And
yeah.
that's like in Coopers, in their sparkling, or in just in the Coopers Pale Ale, which is in the United States, BJCP calls it Australian Sparkling Ale. The Pride of Ringwood is like that. If you can get fresh Coopers, that's a very good example of that kind of iron, sort of almost blood-like, metallic sort of flavor that Pride of Ringwood
Which
has.
is very not consistent with anything that we know as Americans for Australian and New Zealand hops today. Like,
Right.
we're so like that focus, the hop products Australia, that at the time their focus on that hop was about bittering and getting the bittering qualities, the alpha, you know, what you needed to just make mass brown beer. And then they eventually decided to start focusing on flavor and aroma qualities of hops. And so, like, Galaxy hit the market in about 2009, which is not that long ago, you know, considering history of
Right.
hops. So they're great for, you know, your juicy IPAs, your hazies, your you can make some really nice, like, kind of lagers with them too, if you kind
Oh,
of
yeah.
just like a simple, not like a let's not over hop it, let's do a simple, subtle hop profile.
Right, but
You know,
like a New
think cold
Zealand Pilsner?
IPA.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I really like them in mixed firm also.
yeah.
particularly like with Brett, because you've got
Tropical.
those, same kind of pango flavors.
And then other, that's kind of our main producers. We're like, you're like, what about Belgium? Belgium makes a lot of hops for their area, but they're just making like everybody's hops. They make Cascade, they make Northern Brewer, they make Goldings, they make Houtire. So they're,
Yeah.
it's very Belgian like of them too. It's like
Oh,
we
that's
just
a really
make,
good point.
you know, it's like we just make all the beer, we just make
Right.
all the hops, we just do
Right.
all the styles, we don't have any guidelines.
Yeah, Belgian brewers do not give a fuck.
And which kind of leads me to end on China, which I thought was cool. A little note is that like they grow a lot of hops, like a 15% of the world's production of hops they grow, and they use them all. And they're making all the styles. They're making every style that America or that the world makes, because I'm not saying that they don't have their own styles. I'm just saying I don't really know anything about them. There are so much about hops and styles. There are countries we haven't even talked about, like Africa, who are growing own hops and have their own beer styles.
South Africa.
South Africa specifically, my bad.
Not the continent of
Not the continent. There's a lot more we could talk about with hops. Again, we'd love your suggestions. This is your fault. Just kidding, it's not your fault, it's our fault. But you know, if you any topic doesn't have to be about hops, but anything you guys want to hear, we'd love to know, because we want to talk about what you want to hear about.
Right, for sure. Well, thank you, Rachel, for that information.
You're welcome.
You're welcome for me continuing to interrupt you.
No, it was great. I love it.
And
You're the master, so you got to make sure I'm not
hey,
fucking up.
that's
That's
right.
this is your responsibility now.
Perfect. Well, thank you everyone for listening and for taking this mild abuse from the two of us. You can let us know what you would like for us to talk about at False Bottom Girls on Instagram and Facebook. You can also email us, falsebottomgirls@gmail.com, and you can visit our website, falsebottomgirls.com. Yeah, no, I'm never good at figuring out how to end episodes.
Oh,
So,
I know. It's okay,
yeah.
because one day we'll have someone to do all this for us. We're like,
That's true.
here's
Maybe that's
our
how
rant.
we end start ending our podcast. One day we'll have someone to do all of this for us.
Thank you, everybody.
Smell you later.
This has been False Bottom Girls,
And we make the brewing world go round.